shocking predictions. The WEF's latest report unveils our future. Now, not all predictions about the future are a guess, at least not when you're the group controlling the world. And when you're in the, you know, top puppeteer of the world, like the World Economic Forum or the WEF, they're the most infamous of the lot. And that's because the ideas and the policies that come from their NGO appear to have more influence over our daily lives than our own governments. This is especially true when it comes to the economy. It's called the World Economic Forum, after all. And if you want to know what's coming next in the economy, then just keep your eyes on them, as they're going to tell you. And they recently released a new report titled Chief Economist Outlook of May 2024. And they broke all of this down. So in this video, I'm going to break down the key pieces of this report that you need to be aware of. We're going to take a look at what specific predictions does the WEF report make about our future? How do these predictions impact our lives and the world around us, and what we need to do to protect ourselves and win as these changes take place? If you want to know where the world is heading over the next few years and decades, then you do not want to miss this video. So let's just jump right in. All right, so we're just going to go ahead and jump right in here. My name is Mark Moss. I make these videos to keep you up to date on what is going on in the world of economics, macro investing, and so forth. And we're going to talk about this report right now because it sort of tells us the future. And more specifically, what specific predictions does the World Economic Forum report make about our future? Now, their report predicts cautious optimism about the global economy, with almost 7 out of 10 respondents in their poll expecting for global growth to return to 4% within the next 5 years. But that may be hard to believe, and as a matter of fact, not everyone agrees. As a matter of fact, a sizable minority, about 25%, are actually not on board with that. They're much more pessimistic. And these, about a quarter of these respondents believe that global growth is never going to return to 4%. Well, never's a long time, but I think getting back to 4% anytime soon is probably a dream. So I agree with that. However, it's what they hint at. It's what they hint at as being the solution is that what really bothers me. And this is the stuff that I want to pay attention to and bring to your attention. Now, in the paper, in a section titled A Challenging Global Landscape, they talk about the importance of governance taking control over geopolitical and domestic political factors as sources of economic volatility. Now, you can see this in the report's near, unanimous prediction, 97%, as a matter of fact. 97% say that geopolitics will be a major source of volatility, and they suggest that there's going to be this environment where governments should actually use this instability to impose restrictive measures and take more control. So they want the volatility to happen, the geopolitical volatility, wars, rumors of wars, things like that, so that they can use that instability to impose restrictive measures and take more control, of course, under the guise of maintaining economic stability. So, like Biden just floated the other day, like a 5% rent increase or capping the price of ice cream. So using this volatility as an excuse to grab more control, of course. Now, the paper also predicts that the Middle East conflict that we're seeing and the escalation could actually spike oil prices. Now, if that happens, of course, that leads to a lot more inflation. It leads to a lot higher interest rates, which, of course, why I've been pounding the table on inflation. I believe that some of the inflation that we've seen lately has been some of the lowest inflation we'll probably see for the rest of the decade. And the WEF, the Economic Forum, seems to agree. They also talked about Eastern Europe. And they said that Eastern Europe would further be destabilized due to conflicts and financial pressures. So, of course, we're seeing that. That's Ukraine, the situation with Russia and Ukraine. But they think that it'll be further destabilized due to these conflicts. And they said that the real risk of disrupting the global microchip supply chain is coming from China and Taiwan. Of course, like we already know that. But they think that this could escalate to a point that it could actually put a serious disruption into the global microchip supply chain. And if they do, what happens? Well, prices go up again. Again, more inflation. Now, the big one that I was looking for, and of course it's, on the more political front, is that the World Economic Forum, the WEF, they warn that the rise of nationalist parties globally could disrupt the global focused economy and then cause short-term economic pain. How dare those nationalist parties? Let's think this through here. So nationalist parties, meaning you know, parties that want to think about the good of their people first and then the good of their country over the good of the world. So what the WEF is saying is those people thinking about, you know, themselves and their own country, they could disrupt the globalist focused economy. Yeah, that's the whole point. The globalist focused economy are the ones who think about the world more than the people, right? Now, the thing is that there is no world. There is no economy. There is only people. So you have to think about the people first. Now, these people, these globalists, are the same ones who would rather keep millions of people without energy, keep them back in the dark ages, because it's better for the world. That makes sense? It's better that millions of people are starving because it's better for the world. You got that? So they think that these globalist plans will be disrupted by people thinking nationally. And I would say, yeah, good job. We should do that. Now, they also talked about a really big piece in the report that was focused on energy policies. And of course, I've covered the WEF and their reports for a long time now, and it always comes down to the energy, back to the poor living in the dark ages. And in the paper, the WEF has serious concerns over energy policies and their impact on economic growth. Now, the report suggests that the energy transition that they suggest is going to have a very positive impact on growth in high-income economies. Now, of course, you know, that's because there's going to be trillions of dollars that's going to be spent to convert the existing electric system into a new electrified system, right? But this presents a disparity. And this is what they talk about in the report. It presents this disparity that could be used as a way to justify increased control and intervention in low-income regions. So, for example, no natural gas for you. I know it's cheap, but it doesn't fit our narrative. And so, unfortunately, these low-income people are being told what they can cook their food with, how they can heat their house, even though that more control leads to, you know, more price increases for them. Now, this could potentially restrict their development under the guise of what they call environmental protectionism. And then as I continued to go through the paper, it got a little scary, to say the least, especially when we went deep on the focus on removing carbon-based energy to focus on low-carbon energy and renewables. That's the whole point of the electrification, right? They want to get rid of the carbon, the fossil fuels, the oil, the gas, and move us to electricity. Never mind how electricity is made. We'll maybe come back to that. But they want to remove the carbon-based energy and focus on low-carbon energy and renewables. Renewables, or unreliables, as I like to call them, and they think that there'll be significant growth drivers, and worse, you know, these restrictive policies that will phase out fossil fuels potentially would result in energy shortages. And if we have energy shortages, what happens? Well, lower standard of living for most people and higher costs for consumers. Now, one thing that was interesting when talking about the energy policies, and more importantly, who controls this transition of the energy systems to this electrification of everything, in that they discussed how skepticism about ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance, how skepticism about ESG investments could actually pose a risk to their goals. Yeah, of course. That's why they don't want us to have any skepticism. That's why they don't want us to talk about this. They don't want me to talk about this. As a matter of fact, I found out my YouTube channel was put on some list because I talk about these things. They don't want us to talk about these things because it could cause skepticism and that poses a risk to their goals. Well, if it's such a good idea, you don't have to hide good ideas, right? In the world of the free information economy, the good ideas would win. Yeah, because they're better. If you have to suppress another side of the argument, it's probably a good idea you're on the wrong side. But back to the report. They cited a recent survey of chief executive officers, CEOs, and they found that 3/4 expressed skepticism about ESG. Of course, CEOs have skepticism because they see the damage it's doing to their companies. Of course, costs went up, productivity went down. Now, furthermore, 23% reported deprioritizing sustainability over the last 12 months due to challenging economic conditions and a greater focus on other priorities. So about 1/4 of them are saying, look, we're just not going to focus on that anymore. Like, we have way more important things to focus on the economy, like, you know, staying in business in this challenging time and, you know, continuing to grow and service our customers. Let's think about that instead, which, of course, that's the point of a business. Now, what they're saying, though, the WEF's saying in this paper is that this demonstrates a significant level of doubt about the relevance and effectiveness of the ESG frameworks. Yes, of course it does. You can't force this in. If they were good policies, you wouldn't have to force them in. They would be chosen. Now, of course, You can tell by my commentary, I think this is a good thing. The market should be making its own choices. But of course, for the globalists, there's no room for individual think, right? Where your own interests, a nation's own interests, are above the globalist interests, right? They can't have that. However, now before you get too excited, another study that they cited said that over a three-year period, 43% of CEOs highlighted decarbonizing their business models and achieving net zero emissions as important strategic priorities. That's over a three-year period, but it's the trend, right? So on a three-year period, about half, 43%, said it was important. But on a 12-month period, the last 12, 25% said they're not really focused on that anymore. Now, in the paper, it suggests that while immediate economic pressures may push ESG to the background, there's still recognition of its importance in the long run. That's what the paper said. I think it was a little bit optimistic because, in my opinion, like I said, over the long run, it has been. In the short run, it's not as important. That's the tide turning, in my opinion. Now, what does all this mean? And more importantly, how do we protect ourselves from this and even profit from these predictions that are most likely to come true? Now, before I get into that part, I just want to tell you quickly about today's show sponsor. Now, the sponsor is tied directly to what the WEF and both Biden and Trump seem to be supporting, which is the energy transition, the electrification of our energy grid, pushing electric vehicles, renewable energy, you know, solar farms. And the company, the sponsor, is Hillcrest Energy Technologies. Their ticker is HLRTF. We'll put it up on the screen. And in my opinion, this company's sort of like hearing about Bitcoin, you know, in 2010 and a few cents, or, you know, Apple in the early days, right before they launched, you know, their iPhone, something like that. And the reason why is because Hillcrest developed a groundbreaking and a revolutionary technology called ZVS, a ZVS converter. And basically that invention could change the entire electrification and energy transition that we're talking about, of the whole world. And the best part is that this company is so small, it's got a market cap of about 20 million-ish. And so, you know, what is the deal with this ZVS converter? And basically, ZVS stands for a zero voltage switching. And Hillcrest is the very first company to figure out how to virtually eliminate energy loss when you convert electricity from DC to AC or vice versa. Now, you see, when you have a battery, like an electric vehicle, or you have solar panels on your roof, the energy has to be converted from AC to DC or DC to AC, right, vice versa. And when this energy conversion happens, what happens is there's always a loss of energy, literally like wasted energy. And that amounts to billions of dollars of waste. So what you want is this conversion process to be done with as little energy loss as possible. So of course, to fix this, it would be a massive cost savings for companies and for the power grid, billions of dollars. And that's what Hillcrest has actually done. They cracked this. It's what Elon Musk has called the Holy Grail. And what they did differently was they realized it wasn't just a hardware problem like most people thought. It was basically a hardware problem and a software problem that they needed to be designed. And that's what exactly what they did. And of course, they put a patent on it. Now, like I said, it's like the Holy Grail. And up until now, it's only existed in a laboratory environment, but it's been in the lab for years. And finally, Hillcrest cracked the code. They've brought this to market. And for the very first time, the only commercial grade inverter of its kind in the world they have out right now. And they're years ahead of their competitors in the field right now. And they have a huge first mover advantage. And yes, they have a patent. So now, why does this matter? Well, let's just say for electric vehicle manufacturers, they can reduce the size and the weight of their battery by 15%. They can get extended range, and it's easier and cheaper to build their car. In fact, the average savings on an EV will be $2,200 per car. Now, multiply that times millions of cars, and we're talking about a big number. And let's say that you're a solar farm, right? They're popping up all over the world, right? And they're just finishing their commercial grade inverter. Now, the average solar farm could save an additional $13 million. And these inverters are cheap. They're like $1,500. So save $1,500, save $13 million. What do you think is going to happen? Well, Hillcrest has actually figured out how to do it, and they're already in talks with some of the largest electric vehicle manufacturers in the world right now. And when you look at their share price, it's barely budged so far. It hasn't even moved, and that's because so few investors actually know about this hidden gem of a company. So it's basically priced at the amount of money they spent to develop the technology and get the patent at their cost basis. Talk about being on the ground floor. Now, this means the stock price doesn't account for any sales yet, right? Because they're just in the testing phase, but they have over a dozen major auto manufacturers testing it right now. So it's only a matter of time before the big order and the contracts start rolling through. So Hillcrest cracked the code on the Holy Grail. They're manufacturing a zero voltage switching inverter. They're the first ever in history in mankind to be able to do this. And Hillcrest Energy Technologies has done it. And their CEO says that they do not believe any other company is even nearing competing with them right now. So guys, look, write down this stock, right? Write the ticker down. Keep your eyes on it. Maybe, you know, put it on your watch list, but keep your eyes on it. And remember that you're learning about this right now on this channel before any sales revenue and before anybody else, right? The ground floor. So study their history, study the technology, and you'll see that this company is truly revolutionary. It's going to revolutionize the WEF agenda, the Biden agenda, the Trump agenda, and the electrification of the grid. Okay, now back to the news story. All right, let's get back to the WEF's latest news release and what they're talking about. Specifically, we want to know, what does this mean? And more importantly, how do we protect ourselves from all of this, right? What the WEF is talking about. And more importantly, how do we protect ourselves, but how do we profit from these predictions that are most likely to come true? So the first thing we want to think about is concentration versus diversification. Now, you hear constantly that you need to diversify, spread your money all out, but not really. If there's a couple sectors that are going to crush it, like, you want to put most of your money there. So diversification can often be diversification. And so if we see that the main segments of the economy are going to be tech and energy-driven narratives, right, then we want to be there. Information technology-heavy businesses, they're going to see a rapid increase in their profitability due to, you know, increased automation and tech advancements. We want to be there. Of course, AI automation, right, especially through this energy transition, right, and it's going to be having to transition to meet their rising demand. We want to be there. And we want to be in early-stage companies developing the new tech for this next phase of the technology revolution that we're in right now. So forget the diversification across the economy. We want to focus on the good sectors. And as always, you have to continue to stay updated because this is changing fast. You want to stay updated on the global economic trends, the policy changes, because this is going to be the key to navigating this uncertain economic landscape. But that's it. Stay focused. Stay focused on this transition. This is where trillions of dollars have flown into the economy. And if you stay focused there, you'll have success. Now, if you want to know about this investing black hole, you might want to watch this video I put right here that explains it in much more detail. Otherwise, let me know what you think about the video. Give me a comment down below. Thumbs up if you like it. If you don't, thumbs down. That's okay. At least leave me a comment and tell me why. And that's what I got. To your success. I'm out.